Hello and welcome back to another episode of For Mom Friends. Thank you so much for joining us on this very special topic that is close to all of our hearts, especially because it is about one of our moms, Megan Peters, but we'll get into that later. Another reason we're so excited about this episode is because our fourth mom friend is finally with us, Ms. Liz Shally.
Yay!
Welcome, Liz. Excited to be here.
I'm Liz, and I am the fourth mom friend.
Not in any particular
order. No, I'm
just
the fourth to join.
Fourth to be coming in. And I am a mom to one happy little boy who's going to be one next month. I can't believe it. And I'm a school counselor for work, and I absolutely adore what I do. When I have any free time, which is never, I like to decorate and craft, and I'm having a lot of fun planning Oliver's first birthday right now.
We have missed you.
We have.
I'm happy. I'm happy to be back in action. And we know I love to talk, so.
We wanted to give a shout out to everyone who gave us feedback about our podcast. Thank you for listening and helping us make us better. Really, we cannot do this without you. We're just four mom friends who love to connect with each other, and we're super excited that people listen and give us the good feedback. So if you ever have any thoughts about our show, questions, comments, please feel free to email us at formomfriends@gmail.com. Again, that's formomfriends@gmail.com. Or you can also reach out and direct message us on Instagram or however you can get a hold of us.
Call me, meet me if you want to reach me.
One of the suggestions we got that we were really excited about and we wanted to give it a try was called Rose and Thorn, which we also love because Megan and her family do this during their weekly family dinners on Friday nights. So Megan, since you're the expert, why don't you go ahead and give us your rose and thorn for the week?
Okay, so I always like to start off with my thorn.
So we end on a good note.
So my thorn this week is definitely that Elliot she started daycare and then got her first cold. So not only do I have just like daycare mom guilt, I have my kid is sick guilt, and it's just been tough to deal with, lots of puke and snot and all that good stuff. And now I have a sore throat and a runny nose. I'm gonna try not to sniff on this show. My rose this week is I just took Penelope to see Aladdin in the movie theater, and it was so friggin' funny and so cute. And I've been telling her I would take her for weeks, and we never got the chance to. So she was super happy to get in, and we were laughing. And it's those big reclining chairs, and we just snuggled up in one, and we had a blast. So I'm really happy we did that.
Yay.
And I'm currently wiping my nose with my shirt.
I love those seats.
I feel so good that it's yours.
Yeah, I know. Great. I do too. Alex, what about you?
So, I guess I'll go thorn first then. Pretty much every night this week, Elijah has had some type of tantrum before going to bed, which is extremely rare for him. He usually like goes to bed pretty easy. We have our like routine, and it was every night he just was not ready for bed. And it was not fun. And then Thursday night was just such a battle, which really sucked because my rose was that it was our 6-year wedding anniversary and we had a weekend away without him, which was great. So it was really fun. We had a nice little kind of mini staycation and got to just reconnect. So
that's so nice.
Yeah. Liz, you want to go next?
Okay, so my thorn. Oliver's never been a great sleeper. It's not his strength.
He's a baby. But we've always like
he has his like way that he goes to sleep. We put him in the carrier and he's like we get him out. It's not ideal because he's honest. And now all of a sudden he has just like decided that he hates it so much. And he only wants to go to sleep while attached to my boob in my arms. So that's a lot of pressure and exhausting. Mm-hmm. I love the snuggles. I do. And I feel guilty, but like, it's just hard being the only one.
Yeah.
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 I think all moms can relate to that in some way. But my rose is that he took his first steps today. That was such a special moment.
Ollie
took 3 steps and acted like it ain't no thing. Mitchell and I were like, I'm happy we were both there for it, too. We kept saying that we didn't want one of us to miss it. So that was a good day.
So I will go because obviously I'm this week. Let's see. It's one of the same. So my thorn was my kids were gone all week. It's the last week before school starts. So my parents who are out in L.A., decided that they were going to help us out and watch the kids. So both of my kids were gone. So it was really sad because it got really quiet. You guys know, if you follow me on Instagram, you saw that I was sad. Megan saw that I was sad on Marco Polo. I was like, I'm so alone.
I'm so lonely. There's no noise.
It was like a ghost town in my house. But it's also a rose because I was alone. Like getting through that mom guilt. I mean, we talked about it in the last episode, but getting through that mom guilt of that first like night of not having them there, I couldn't sleep. I didn't fall asleep until like 2:30 a.m. But then I realized they are happy. They are with people that love them. And being able to have that support system is also another rose of having family members who are willing to step in and help us out because John works nights. So getting daycare at night, not really ideal. I mean, there's no overnight 24-hour daycare places, is there?
Anyone? I wish.
Who wants to start one?
Right? But yeah, that's my rose and thorn. And I wonder if there are other people out there too that have rose and thorns that would want to share with us or can relate to our rose and thorns, because I would love to hear that we are not alone.
Yeah.
The way that we feel things. And that's like the premise of our show is this village that we have. So if you do, like Alex said earlier, DM us, message us, I don't know, send us fire messages. I don't know how to talk. Fire signals.
After there. I'm like, fire messages.
Not fire messages.
Almost there. We need like a bat signal for Mom. We need like a little palm tree.
I do want to jump into our main topic of this episode because it is close to my heart. It is Megan's story with her new child.
I just want to say how excited we are to talk about this really important topic. I think either adoption has affected you in some way, or you may have questions about it. And we're here to hopefully answer some of those questions. We got some really great feedback and questions from our followers, and hopefully we're here to answer them. So I just want to say thank you so much for opening up about this, Megan.
Oh my gosh, of course. Thank you guys for showing any interest.
It's really interesting. And one, because we love you and we love Elmo. But I think that adoption is just such a special thing that I think it definitely needs to be talked about more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think like,
and it's definitely growing. Yeah. It seems like there's more and more of it happening. Mm-hmm. And it's just a really important way to grow families now.
And I think for me, it was something where you think you know, but then hearing everything you were telling us while you were going through the process, it was like, I did not know.
Yeah. And I still have questions
about adoption. One of the reasons why we chose to do an episode about adoption, and we are going to try and get through as much as we can with all the feedback that we have. Obviously, as we talk and more questions come about, and you, our listeners, if you have any questions that come about, we are more than willing to open it up to another episode or messaging you back. I know Megan's very open and willing to give her answers. So feel free to email us, DM us, anything. But Megan, I think you should just go in and kind of tell everyone a little background story about
ultimately decide how on it. About.
Okay. So, okay, good start. We ultimately decided on adoption after failed infertility treatments, but I want to kind of just go back and talk about even, you know, years before we tried to have kids, Charlie and I very cavalierly spoke about adoption. And now looking back, I wish we hadn't been so blasé about it. We talked about it as if like, well, we'll have two kids and then we'll have the third by adoption so that we don't have to get pregnant again. Or, you know, it's so hard to be pregnant with children around and toddlers and babies. So maybe we'll just adopt the third. We were very disrespectful to the process because we really didn't know. So, and that was well before any struggles to be pregnant. I don't think that was even before we were. We always had talked about it. Yes. Even before we were married, it was just like a thing. It was like buy a house, get a dog, adopt a baby. I totally regret now, but you live and you learn, right? But after so much failed infertility treatment and the loss of our son at almost 5 months and then two more miscarriages after that, I was just sort of done with all of that. It felt like so much on my body, so many hormones are being pumped in and needles and drugs. And we were living and dying and breathing by like numbers on screenings every day. I'm driving to Providence to get blood work at 8 a.m. before I go to work, at 9. And waiting crazily by the phone until noon when they call me to say what number I have and how many follicles and what my lining is and if I'm ovulating and all these things. And it was just crumbling if the numbers weren't there, or the numbers were there, but then you still didn't end up pregnant. There was just so much peeing on sticks and peeing on my hand half the time that I just really, I just couldn't do it anymore. And along with like guilt feeling like my husband's also trying to have a child and all of this lands on me. After the last miscarriage, we were like 8 weeks along. We came home and we had done this now 2 times already. We had gotten the news that the baby wasn't going to survive. We had come home, literally just like stripped down into nothing, literally taken our clothes off, crawled into bed and just sobbed. And not even really like held each other, kind of held each other, but mostly just each sobbed into our own pillows of like despair and frustration. So after the last one, we were sobbing. We both took a deep breath and I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. I can't. So I want to adopt a baby. And he said, I agree with you. I'm done. I want to adopt a baby. And we did like honestly never really, I guess I would be lying if I said we never really looked back, but we mostly just continued to move forward. So that was really how we came to adoption. I don't think there's any real romantic answer. And I think maybe some people might find that very, again, I need to come up with a better word than like, I don't even know if cavalier is the right word, but very nonchalant. And maybe we didn't put enough, like we fell into it, or we just sort of used it as like a plan B, or we gave up, you know, trying to have a biological child. You know, I'll be really honest, we didn't even try IVF. We just tried IUI. And once those didn't work, I was just too exhausted after that. And I felt like IVF is about 10 grand around for us with our insurance. And I know so many people, I'm in a very supportive infertility group. And I know so many people have tried IVF, you know, 2, 3, 4 rounds. And I kept thinking to myself, if I try even two rounds and it doesn't work, that's $20,000 down the drain, but I could potentially adopt a baby and use that money for that. So I just kept feeling like it's not for me. I'm not doing it. Now, would I ever consider doing it now? Yeah. Now that I already have Elle and my, like I have children, they are close in age and they love each other and they're best friends at this point, I would take that risk. I feel like that timing was a lot of
pressure for you because you wanted that for your girls.
Exactly. I think half of the battle was like secondary infertility. I know a lot of people talk about the stress of trying to add to your family in a timely manner. And that is exactly what we felt like. You know, not that I didn't want to have, or not that it would have been bad to have a 10-year-old and a 1-year-old, but it's sort of like you choose to have children, you expect phases of your life. And it was like, we were already out of diapers. We were out of potty training. We were out of, you know, toddler walking and all that. And we were going to have to do it again, but it's like, you kind of wanted them close in age for just so that they are close, that they go to school together, that they experience the same things. They have the same friends, all that kind of stuff. And now my girls are 4 years apart, which is a lot, but they'll make it work.
Yeah.
There's also something to say too, about your own relationship with your husband. You have this idea that, okay, when they turn 18 or 21, they're on their own. And if the longer that goes, the longer you're older you're going to be.
So very true.
So you might say that it was cavalier, but at the same point, because you've spoken about it, I don't think it was. And I think it was for your family at the time. It was the smart choice financially.
You just wanted a baby to love.
We
really did. You know, anyone who knows you can like, you can feel that when you're around you. So I'm like going to get emotional. I'm going to cry. I'm not the crier too.
We've been talking a lot about the girls. So if you haven't seen our Instagram story, if you don't follow Megan and haven't seen it, Elle is her newly adopted baby girl. So Megan's already gone through the process. And, you know, we used Marco Polo as a way to get through a lot of that process and understand more of the process. And I know that's why we wanted to open it up to our audience. And some of the feedback that we got back not only was about Elle, but about your feelings about adoption. And about one of the questions that I saw was, how have you or did you deal with family or friends who maybe didn't get it and think you should keep trying to have a biological child? Like, was there ever that
questioning
feedback or that kind of like
resistance?
You know, I don't think I experienced that from my family. I think I might have experienced that within myself. a lot. Kind of, as I said before, like there's a sense of giving up that I definitely dealt with. But honestly, I went to therapy every week through this because it's so heavy and it takes a lot of looking into yourself and figuring out like, well, what preconceived notions do I have about fertility, infertility, adoption, biological children, adopted children. My suggestion, though, if that is something that people are going through or experiencing when they're considering adoption, the best thing you can do, I think, is to continue to educate your family about infertility and that the mental and emotional struggle that comes with it is very real, while also presenting adoption as like a beautiful choice in a way to grow your family, not so much as presenting it as like plan B. Like, well, infertility failed us, so we're going to adoption. But more saying like we are choosing this path to grow our family because this path is a struggle for us mentally and emotionally. We're trying to protect that. That would be my suggestion. I didn't really experience that. I'm very lucky. I have a very, very supportive family. I also have family who has adopted. My great aunt's adopted. So immediately when we put it out there, we got a lot of really great support. And we felt like we had a team behind us saying, yeah, this is a good idea. Go get it. And you guys were part of that. I mean, most of that anyway, to say, yeah, it's okay to stop trying. You know, if you're beating your head up against the wall and it's not going anywhere, you can try a different path to grow your family.
So it's interesting that we saw this next question because I'd never heard this feedback before. But someone was asking, what do you say to those people who think babies should stay with their birth mothers? And I had never thought about it in that way. And I did see someone who came out about it. Their opinion was that they should, but with the caveat of that the problem is that there's this system that's failing a lot of people who would like to keep their babies. And I think that's a great point, but yeah. I definitely don't think that accounts for all of the babies that are, I think there's still a lot of babies who need to be adopted. Yeah. So I think I want to hear your answer to that, but I just found that really interesting because it's not a black or white thing.
I know. Yeah, I know. I think that's a really good question. I think that was from Amy in Massachusetts who I really appreciate when people ask questions that might be a little bit uncomfortable to talk about. So I know when I was researching adoption agencies and all that kind of stuff, I actually stumbled upon an agency. So it's a nonprofit organization that is set up to try to keep babies with their birth mothers when a birth mother is considering adoption. So it's marketing and targeting mothers who are searching adoption options, right? To say like, I need to place my baby. And instead it's like, don't place your baby. We will help you keep your baby. Like, you can do this. It's very empowering. And I at first was like, okay, well, that's really good. That's great for that organization. And then the more I read about it, I was kind of like, well, where are you going to be in 12 years when this woman who chose to keep her baby still has no, or potentially, you know, whatever her barriers are, access, education, income, transportation, like who knows what her, she could still be in an abusive relationship. She could still not, you know, not be with the father and be a single parent. Like, you don't really know what the reasons are that people choose to look into adoption. And unless you're going to literally say like, I'll be there with you for the rest of your life, like it doesn't seem fair. I of course say that while also thinking, if a mother feels empowered to raise her own child, then wonderful. And we experienced that knowledge and that education in our prepping for our adoption. You know, we talked about it a lot. We could be matched and we could drive all the way across the country. We could fly to Alaska and we could meet that baby and hold her for 2 days. And then, you know, her mom can change her mind. So we were prepared for that. And so while I do think if a mother wants to keep her baby and feels like she can, then that's wonderful. If a mother feels as though she cannot or doesn't want to, and there's no judgment, then she has every right to do what's best for her child, you know? And I also like to think sometimes we see on the news children who end up left on the side of the road or in a bag or flushed on a toilet or Lord knows what else. And if those are your options, of course, I would say a baby should be with someone that's going to take care of them, not just their mother.
Yeah. I feel like an organization like that, if you are the person that can take that and and really absorb it and grow from it, that's great. But if you're going to almost brainwash somebody who's not prepared to do that, it's not fair for the child. What life is that child going to have?
This organization specifically felt really slimy. I didn't feel like it was a good organization. And I mean, I've worked for an organization where we worked with pregnant and parenting teens. So we, you know, they had social workers and counselors to help them finish their education, get a job, work on their resume, make sure their children had formula or taught them about breastfeeding, whatever they were choosing. And so we were really there to coach them through the entire process. But these were not people who were planning or trying to place their children for adoption. These were people who were just young parents. So I think that there's a fine line.
This kind of reminds me, or it's not what a question that we have, but it's something that we haven't talked about just yet with our audience, is the type of adoption that you have. So you, there are different types of adoptions out there, obviously. And the specific one that you have is an open adoption, which means...
There's a few things. Like a public adoption, I believe. And I, you guys, I'm not an expert. I'm just a mom who adopted a kid. So I will do my best. I'll do my best to explain what I think. But I think a public adoption is when you go through the state. So you work with like a DCFS or something like that in your state to adopt a child. A private adoption is when you work with either a lawyer, a facilitator, or an agency or something similar to place you with a mom who is choosing, a mom and or a dad, a birth mom and or dad, who's choosing to place their child. The other, even before they're born, or actually sometimes even after, sometimes up to 6 months, sometimes up to a year. And there is even such thing as a toddler adoption, which I don't know enough about to speak about educatedly. Educatedly is not really a word. I'm really sweating over here, guys. I'm not going to lie. So the other side of things are open and closed adoption. And that truly is a spectrum. So there can be closed adoption where a birth mother or birth father have chosen to place a baby. They don't even find out the gender of their baby. They deliver and it gets handed over and they know nothing about anything. They know nothing about where that baby is being placed. The adoptive parents know nothing really about where that baby's coming from. They might know very generic things like mother is of this ethnicity and this age, and that might be it. There's really no contact. And this is really how adoption was 15 to 30 years ago and beyond. And it's changed a lot because of things like 23andMe and Ancestry.com and all that kind of stuff. People were ending up finding, and social media, right? Digital media, social media, people are finding their birth parents anyway. And then there was a lot of more psychology and research done about the effects of children who were placed and have no connection to their background. So the more traditional way of doing it is sort of outdated. And now it's more common to have an open adoption, which again is on a spectrum. So our adoption is open that we know the birth mother, we met her at the hospital. We got a lot of her health history, self-reported health history, I'll say. And we, you know, were in and out of her room and hugs and got to ask her questions and she got to ask us questions. And to this day, you know, we stay in touch with text messages. We'll send her photos of Elle. If she's feeling up to it, she'll ask, you know, how Elle is. But I usually try to stay on top of it so she doesn't have to ask me because I don't want her to feel uncomfortable doing that. I want her to just know it's always coming. So yeah, there are different forms of what that means. Some people have open adoptions with people in their community, especially if they've met through a church or a local adoption agency where they do visits or even later on in life, like sleepovers. So it's really, it's totally a spectrum. And I guess my only thing for Elle that I can hope is that she feels love from both sides, right? Love from our, you know, her forever mom, love from her first mom, and that she never has to say to me like, well, mom, why didn't you try? You know, so that's my goal with her in this open adoption.
Yeah. And I feel like with that, with what you're saying, kind of brings in light, like my own personal experience. My dad was adopted and he didn't find out he was adopted until like his early 20s. So, or when he was 18, like he was in the Philippines, his mom traveled to America, became a U.S. citizen. And she was like, you need to come become a U.S. citizen here. And it wasn't until he filed to become a U.S. citizen that he found out he was adopted. So as like a person of someone who was adopted,
yeah.
I want to know that lineage. I want to know my, and that's great that you're doing that for Elle, because that legacy and the family that she's going to have, they're going to have the answers that they have. They're going to be able to be like, well, this is biologically my great grandparents, you know, when they go into those things at school, where I couldn't. I was like, well, I got my dad. He's Filipino, and I think I'm a little bit Chinese. I don't know. I don't know. But I mean, that is a great advent of 23andMe, but I think it's so great that you are going that route with Elle and giving her the tools that she's going to want to have later on in life, about the questions she's going to have later on in life, because everything is going to help shape who she is.
Liz, I feel like for her. Just emotionally, it seems like it'd be really hard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes.
Maybe, except it's also one of those things where you don't know the other. You don't, it's not like you've experienced a closed adoption and now you're choosing to experience open. Like, I don't have another experience, so this is all I know. Liz, am I correct in remembering that one of your best friends is adopted? And how does she feel about, is
not,
hers open or closed?
I'm guessing, I don't,
I mean, she's 30,
yeah, she's
right?
About my age.
So it's gotta be closed,
but she
probably
didn't have any, not knowledge, but she didn't have any relationship with them until recently. As an adult, she did. But her parents were very open. Like, we celebrated her adoption day every year, and that was called her special day, and we had a party, and she never had a problem.
Yeah, it was fun.
I always went and had a blast. She never had any problem with being adopted. Like, there was enough, it wasn't a struggle for her. I know her mom really, I think was always worried that it was, and she always wanted to check in and make sure, like, that she, like, and she ended up, she has a sister who's really close in age, because she ended up getting pregnant while she was going through the adoption process. I can't imagine. But I think she was really happy with it. I do think it was a difficult process when she started. She met some of her family, and I think probably because as an adult, like, she had all these questions and kind of was starting these relationships. I think that's where it actually was more difficult for her. But she, like, it's kind of like what you were saying earlier. It's all she ever knew. She was like, yeah, I'm adopted. This is my family. And yeah, this is how it is.
Right.
I don't think it was ever, I don't know. In the movies, sometimes you see like this like difficult moment and like, oh, it's just, no.
So we got a couple of people that asked, what is the actual process that you had to go through? You know, so yes, there's open, closed, and private and public, but what was the actual process? I mean, I know it took you guys a long time to just
do it. It's not fast. Like, I'm not gonna lie. So everyone has to start with a home study, no matter if you're doing through the state or private. Everyone gets a home study, which means you work with usually an adoption agency or a licensed social worker. And depending on their level of thoroughness, they come to your house for like 4 or 5 meetings. They interview you. They ask you a ton of questions. You have to write up, Charlie and I had to write up very long statements about pretty much our entire life, how we were raised, where we traveled on vacations, what our parents do for our work, what our siblings do, who they're married to. I mean, it was like handing over your whole entire life. How you handle disagreements in your marriage, how you handle parenting if you're already a parent, pretty much everything you could think of. Pages and pages and pages of writing. And Charlie and I are writers and talkers, so I'm sure ours was like triple the amount that we were asking. So they do all of that. They read it all. Then they write up a literal home study that says, you know, basically, this is Charlie and Megan, and we approve them to adopt a single child, or we were actually approved for twins as well. Twins, Basil, which I couldn't stop saying, and Charlie was like, that's inappropriate. So yeah, we were approved for twins and of any gender and of any ethnicity, because you kind of have to decide all of that ahead of time. And once your home study's done, you can work, or simultaneously you can work with an agency, or like I said, a facilitator or a lawyer. That's just, those are the types of ways you can adopt a baby, and that's all really personal preference. We chose an agency. We worked to make a public profile that was available on their website. We worked to make a video that we tried to capture our family and our you know,
I think they did a good
as
job.
Much as possible.
The video is great.
Charlie did a great job.
The video was amazing.
Yeah, maybe we could post
amazing.
It.
I love the video.
Because people, yeah. I mean, I feel like people asked me a lot about it at one point, and we never really even posted it. I don't know why. We posted a lot of outtakes, which
I also, I would say, yeah. I feel like you should post
those
the
were
outtakes.
Hilarious.
The outtakes were amazing.
I mean, but we had to really get a lot of help. We got interviews from our neighbors. We had to have my siblings in it, and my parents, and Charlie's parents. To kind of, you were trying to give a prospective birth parent, you know, what mother or father, like a glimpse into your life in a 3-minute video, which is really hard to do and say, hey, not only are we good people, but we are surrounded by good people. Not only do we care mm-hmm. about education, but we care about community and we care about, you know, sports and all these other things. So we did a video and then we wait. Honestly, we were very lucky. We did not wait that long in the grand scheme of things. Some people wait a year or more. We were told we would be waiting a year. So that was the hard part because planning to wait for something, I literally got an invite for a New Year's Eve wedding. And I was like, I probably can't go. Just letting you know now. I felt like I couldn't plan for anything. Shannon, if you're listening, I'm coming to your wedding. So that part, like not knowing when your baby could come to you is really hard. And then the process after that is technically you are supposed to get matched first. So someone from your agency calls and says, hey, a mother's chosen you. You've been matched. And usually you have some phone calls and try to even have a meeting, like fly out to wherever they are and have a meeting. Because normally there's like a decent amount of time between when you're matched and when a baby's expected to be born. We did not have that. We got matched and the baby was coming in 2 weeks. So we got matched on a Wednesday, which was actually May 8th, which was 9 months to the day from when we lost our last baby, mm-hmm. which is kind of crazy. Mm-hmm. And Charlie really likes those things, so it made him cry extra. we got matched on a Wednesday. I couldn't stop crying, so I had to drive home, which really was stupid because I have an hour and a half long commute. I just cried the whole way. And then I got home and I was like, damn, I'm alive. Like, I don't remember one exit off that ride. I was like sobbing the whole way. And then that was Mother's Day weekend. We did spend the weekend kind of like cleaning out that guest room and turning it into a baby's room. And we built the crib. And then we got a phone call that the baby had come in the like early morning hours of Mother's Day. So
it was so special. I mean, if you follow us on Instagram, you saw the video that Megan's wonderful husband, Charlie, had edited together. But I mean, those were legit our reactions.
Yeah.
Because we, like you said, it was so fast. Wednesday, I remember getting a Marco Polo and sobbing in your car while driving.
And it was like a month or
And then I'm like, man, my Marco Polo is like blasting. What's going on? I look at it like, what? She's born? Like, are you, what? Where are you? Like, what is happening?
I was on my way to my mom's house. So like on Mother's Day, the women in my family always go get our nails done. And then my dad makes a huge dinner and all the husbands and kids join in for dinner. And so I had a bag full of margaritas because I was going to my mom's house first before we went to go get our nails done because they were actually throwing me a baby shower, which was really sweet, but I didn't know it. So tequila and limes and the whole thing. And then I checked my email or I got an email and it was like clearly had been fired off from the social worker, like on her phone. The baby was born. Call me ASAP. And I was like, oh my God, Charlie, the baby's born. And we just started panicking.
And the best part, I just remember because we were visiting Jeremy's aunt in Baltimore and we were like, we are on your way. Just please stop for a couple hours and spend the night on the couch. And you're like, and then you're like, no,
I really wanted to come see you, but I also really wanted to go meet my baby.
You needed to get there. And I totally understand.
Yeah. So I guess the process is a little bit different for everybody, but we got there, we got to the hospital. We were able to meet the baby and the mom pretty much right away. And for us, the process worked out. I'm not going to lie. This is sometimes when the process falls apart. A birth mother has time in every state to change their mind.
Is it different state to
state?
It's different state to state.
And even when they sign the initial paperwork to relinquish their rights, that can be different. Some states, they're required to wait 48 hours after birth because they want to make sure they're not on, you know, any drugs. I was going to say Motrin, but that's morphine and stuff like that. And that they've sort of recovered.
I know. What is Motrin?
I know a lot more than Motrin. Every state is different. Every state is different with their rules. And then every state is different about how long they have to change their mind. So for us, we got there on Monday really early in the afternoon. Baby had been born Sunday. We spent all day Monday kind of going back and forth between our room and her room. And the baby would be with us for 2 hours. Baby would be with her for 2 hours. We would feed her and change her and snuggle her, and it was wonderful. And but at that point, we were already in love.
Talk about how amazing those nurses were with you guys.
Oh, the nurses were amazing. Shout out to the Archambault Hospital, if I'm saying that correctly, in Georgia. Thomasville, Georgia. Yeah. They were so understanding and supportive without ever being coercive to her. They were supportive of her. You know, whatever you need, let us know. If you want more time with the baby and Charlie and Megan have her and you're uncomfortable, let us know. We'll go get her for you. And same to us. Like, if you want more time with the baby, let us know. We'll go get her. they were pretty wonderful. So then Tuesday morning, a social worker, an adoption specialist came down from Atlanta, had a notary with her, had her Elle's birth mom sign the papers. We signed papers, and then we stayed in that hospital actually for another day together because she had a little bit more recovering to do. Elle was really, really underweight and couldn't leave. So she left Wednesday morning maybe, and then we stayed until like Wednesday night. I think that might actually be wrong because all my days are screwed up, but something like that. Or maybe she left us. Maybe she left at some point on Tuesday. She did. She left on some point on Tuesday. Sorry. And then actually Tuesday night, the nurses were like, why don't you guys go have a date? Like, we'll take the baby, go get a date. You're never going to get another date again without at least paying for a babysitter. So like we did, we went out to drinks and had dinner, and that was really nice. And we talked about everything and then came back to the hospital. And then it was like, she was ours immediately, right? It just felt like, okay, this is our baby.
I think that's what I wonder about. Like, did you feel that the moment you met her? This is just such a surreal experience, even though she didn't explain it. That, I mean, I think even when you birth a baby,
I don't know. I mean, I felt like she was mine.
Like, I don't, you know, a lot of times it's like, whoa, what just happened? They just came out of me and now, oh, they're mine.
I think I was trying to temper a lot of experiences because I knew that if I let myself get really high, the fall would be even bigger, but I was definitely like kissing her and she was like snuggled into my chest and her hand just kept finding my heart. And every time her hand landed on my heart, I was like, Charlie, and I'd cry and he'd be like, how does she already know? And I'm like, maybe she just knows that we love her. Like she just feels our love. And I was pretty much like, this is my daughter. Everybody back off. But at the same time, really, really trying to understand what her mother felt like on the other side of that door. And the only thing that gave me kind of like a peace of mind was that her mom was really confident in her decision. So there wasn't really waffling or I wish I didn't have to do this or anything like that. And in those situations, I can only, you know, imagine how much harder it is. But we were really lucky and we didn't experience that.
That's really interesting that you bring that up because I would love to hear from anyone out there who is or has been that person who has given their child up for adoption, their feelings for it, kind of what their process was, because I think that is an interesting side to hear. And you know, whatever your story may be, I think it would be worthwhile to hear and their feelings and know what it was like. And I think, I don't know, I just think that would be super interesting.
I'm not sure how big of a
find more about. If anybody's out,
I've heard that the language that they appreciate is placed for adoption instead of because a lot of, you know, they're making the biggest sacrifice possible.
Given,
a huge decision. Yeah, I learned a lot from this account called Adopt Well on Instagram. I'll give a shout out to Adopt Well and Kindred & Co. and Big Tough Girl and Lifetime Healing. Big Tough Girl and Lifetime Healing are both run by the same person, which is Ashley Mitchell, who's a birth mother who placed her son about 13 years ago or something. And they taught me a lot about language and coerciveness. And even if you're well-intentioned, like what that can come across. So
I think language is so important. So
a lot of
that
is really important.
I love learning.
Language is so important. Yeah. But honestly, yeah, like, I do think it's okay to slip, and we slip. And I don't think that means you're a bad person. I think if you can have empathy for both sides of, or actually really a triad to some degree, like all angles of the triangle, then that's the best you can sometimes do. So then, sorry, just to get back to the process, after the baby has been placed in your care, there's this thing called the ICPC, which is the state placement for the something of children, the care of children. I could be wrong. I used to know all of this, guys, but everything's fuzzy now that we don't sleep.
Now your brain's filled with mom stuff.
And it's true. I'm like diapers, puke, vomit. Yeah. Right. Each state, the state that you're coming from and the state that you're going back to, have to agree on all the paperwork. And Georgia agreed pretty easily, and that was wonderful. And then Massachusetts was like, it was Massachusetts. It was like slow, and it wanted more paperwork than necessary and all this kind of stuff. So Charlie had actually started to head out of Georgia. He drove out of Atlanta and started driving home. He stopped in Virginia to see his parents, and we were expecting that I was going to leave the next morning. So I stayed in the hotel by myself with the baby. I'm near an airport. I was just going to like Uber to the airport or shuttle to the airport. I check out of the hotel the next morning. I'm at an IHOP trying to kill time before I get the text message from the social worker saying I can go home. And all of a sudden the text message comes in and it's like, you're stuck until Friday. And this is Tuesday morning. And I was just like, no. I just started sobbing in an IHOP, which was so pathetic.
I just snorted.
It was so
But those pancakes, they keep you going.
I know. I think I had like
I asked for one more cup of tea and then bobbed
into my tea. Mm-hmm. So I did. I actually went back to the hotel. I checked back in, still sobbing. I'm like, I need another room. And they were so nice. I don't even think they charged me. I'm not going to lie. they put me back in a room and I cried for 2 hours while Elle slept. And then I just got on the phone and I was really not a nice person to so many people, which I'm not super proud of, except that it got the job done. I cried and yelled to lawyers and agency representatives and home study people.
And it's so sad, but it's so sad that that's what you have to do. I mean, there's just so many times in like a week where sometimes that's just
I feel like I had to advocate for my child at some point. Like, this is not in the best interest of this child. She should not be living in a hotel without dish soap for her bottles. Like, this is ridiculous. You guys don't even know where I am, right? If I was at least home, you have my home address on file. Someone can come find me, and if this doesn't go through, someone can come and take this baby away from me. Right now I'm like Blanche on the lam. Like, no one knows where I am.
Is that a Megan thing or is it a Massachusetts thing? Not a California thing.
On the lamb is like, okay, on the lamb is like when you're running. Blanche on the lamb, I think.
Are you looking that up right now?
Blanche, listen.
I'm like, Blanche on the lamb,
I think, is a book. This novel brings to light the intelligence and power of an African-American domestic female worker in the midst of a racist and sexist society. Okay, so I wasn't Blanche, but I was. I felt like I was on the lamb.
So I did
a lot of yelling, and then finally they sent a message and they said, you know, Massachusetts gave you provisional rights to go home early, so you can go home, but you have to finish all your paperwork by Friday. So we had, we went home, we did more paperwork. Everything is more paperwork, more notaries, more money, more paperwork, more notaries. So the last part of this process we haven't done yet, which is the finalization. And we are actually going back to Georgia to literally stand in front of a judge with Elle and say, we take her as our child. And that will be really nice. So with that, we'll be able to petition for a name change and get her a social security card and a birth certificate with the name that we have for her now. Okay, so cost.
So how much did it cost?
All right. No, it's honestly awkward. Like, I don't care.
I mean, if you're okay,
I don't care.
Like,
it's hard to know only because I really didn't like tally up everything, you know, from like takeout food and groceries while we're in Georgia to even like our Airbnbs and our hotels. I can give you a ballpark. It was about $50,000, if not a little bit more. The adoption itself was probably close to like $45,000, and then about $5,000 or $7,000 in everything else.
That just breaks my heart to hear. Because there's so many babies that need to be loved, and there's so many people who aren't in a position to do this.
Yeah, it's such a barrier for so many people. I wish it wasn't that way.
Did you look up when you, in all of your adoption research, did you look up, are there like loans for this kind of stuff? Yeah. Like, or is it really you just have to have
There's a lot of things. There are grants and scholarships from, you know, nonprofits that support that kind of work. There are a lot of people fundraise, which as a professional fundraiser, I was confident that we could do. And fundraising for adoption is an entirely different politically charged conversation. Some people feel like, well, if an adoptive parent can fundraise $50,000, like why can't a birth parent fundraise $50,000? Or what if you gave $50,000 to an expecting mother who was considering adoption? Like how could that change her life? My short answer to that is that it might temporarily change her situation. And
I also
maybe
don't
that
think
would
money
be enough,
is the only reason
but
people
it
place
might not
babies
long
up for adoption.
Right.
Right. You're not going into this to help. I mean, while of course it is changing her life, you're not adopting to change her life. You're adopting to change the child's life. And your life. And sure, $50,000 to anybody would make a difference in their life. But, you know, you should be giving that to the child.
Went to a bunch of lawyers.
Not that it even went to the child.
It's a tricky question. And I don't even know that the answer is that simple. But that's just, I guess, a topic of conversation that a lot of people in the adoption community have. But yeah, it's not obviously all do at once. So for some people that can be... that can help. You can do parts of it at a time. But some of it is big. Like the first check, I think, was 15 grand to sign over. The second was like 30. So it is. It's a lot. And I know that someone asked the question of how did we pay for it? So obviously, I'm super open book and very upfront. Charlie's grandparents owned land that was sold, and he happened to get an inheritance, and we were really lucky to use that. We had planned to use it for an education for Penelope, but like, whoops, she's screwed.
So. Sorry, Penny.
Yeah,
I hope you get herself taken care of.
So yeah, and we were really lucky that we had that because that was the only way for us to really do this.
Did you guys? And I'm sorry if you have told me either in Marco Polo or previously, like within the past hour. But did you guys adopt through the
We did a private domestic infant adoption.
Said, right?
International adoption looked like it was going to be double that price, like $80,000 to $100,000. And then obviously cost of travel is a lot more. So we didn't even consider that an option for us financially, that barrier. And also it's a lot... It seems like a lot harder to have an open adoption in the international realm. And we were really set on that. Actually, to be honest with you, Charlie originally was not set on that. But the more we learned about adoption, the more we decided that that was the healthiest way to go.
Okay. So now that we've kind of all figured out the process, or not figured out, but Megan was so kind to share the process of the adoption, and you have beautiful Albel, and one of the things that is so unique with your adoption is it is an interracial adoption. And I know that we got some questions from viewers, so we're just kind of going to rip through them. We're not going to rip through them. We're going to ask the questions. We're going to give the questions the respect that they deserve. But we're going to ask the questions of our viewers now, and Megan's going to answer it. The first question we got regarding the interracial adoption is from Joanna of Massachusetts. Thank you, Joanna, for sending in your question. But how do you, or how will you handle jokes or assumptions made about Elle's race? However well-meaning.
Okay, that's a really good question. And I'm not going to lie, I don't know that I have one answer. I think that some of the things we learned in our education leading up to was that there are different ways to handle that. And it's also going to evolve when your child gets older and has autonomy. It's also depends on who's saying it, right? If it's a person in a grocery store that you're never going to see again versus someone that you live like a family member, right? You experience often and you don't want to create tension. And so how do you kindly educate without ostracizing or making uncomfortable? So I think the general answer to that is that it will be very situational specific. And we will take what we learned, but we will also continue to ask questions of others who have been in this space, other adoptive parents of transracial families, other, you know, even just my cousin Annie, who is a white woman who married a black man who now has biracial children, right? So how does she handle certain comments, jokes, assumptions about her children? She's taught me a lot. She'll continue to be a resource for me. Yeah. So I think the general answer is education and open conversation. I mean, the best thing I can do is to try to make everything as positive as possible. Speak positively about my daughter, about her skin, her hair, her ancestry.
And you also have no problem saying it how it is. You know, and I think that's important. Like, you'll feel comfortable telling, like, if you need to have a conversation with someone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
If it comes
to that. Or just tell someone.
Yeah, I mean, if you're in a mood, I might tell you. Yeah.
I know.
Our next question was from Patrice in Maine, and she saw the Red Table Talk with Jada Pinkett Smith and Kristen Davis, which, if you haven't listened or watched it on Facebook, it's amazing. And they talked about the white savior complex. Do you see that in your adoption community?
So I agree with Kristen Davis in this answer. I don't experience that in my adoption community that I've chosen to be a part of. However, that is not at all saying that that doesn't exist, or that I could totally understand where that can come from. I don't feel that way. I've never taught my daughter Penelope to feel that way, and I won't let my daughter Elliot think that we feel that way. But I also won't pretend that that's not a real thing.
Yeah, yeah. Especially you live in
white
a very
community.
Yeah. White community.
And honestly, the only thing I can say that we've experienced at this point is when people have said to us, like, oh, you know, what a lucky little girl. Not that anyone has actually said you've saved her, but people have made comments about, inferring that, or kind of saying, I'm trying to think of a specific, but basically saying that she's so lucky you guys got her. And the only thing at this point I've really said back is like, no, we're lucky. We got her. Like, she saved us. We were falling apart and crumbling, and she's the best gift that's ever come to this family. Like, so we're the lucky ones.
She's just lucky that you're gonna love her so much. That is true, though.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
yeah, yeah. So kind of it follows that a little bit. Another question Joanna from Massachusetts had was, what are you afraid of or nervous about regarding race and her identity?
So I think I am mostly afraid of her sense of self as she gets older, feeling like she belongs, feeling like she is in the right place. But at the same time I say that, I kind of have that feeling about Penelope, you know, my biological daughter. Having daughters, I feel like there's this sort of inevitable, who am I? What am I supposed to do kind of feeling with my body, with my hair, with my skin, with my everything. And so it's not the exact same, but I have the same similar fears for both of them. I don't want Elliot to feel like she's doesn't belong in our family. I don't think that's the case that will happen, but I'm obviously open to it. You never know.
You never know.
I mostly don't ever want her to feel like she can't talk to me or her dad or even her sister about it, right? So if at the end of the day I can't do anything to prevent it, which I know I can't, the one thing she should know that she has and she will know is that she can a place to talk. And even though I can't solve the problem when she's talking to me, I can't fix anything, but I can always listen. Something I learned from an adoptee, a transracial adoptee who's really great on Instagram. Basically saying my mom is great and she did everything right, but it doesn't matter. I still feel this sense of lack of identity and lack of history and all that. And so the only thing my mom can do when I'm whining and crying and sad and confused is hear me and tell me that she hears me. So that would be my only thing. I think in general, teenage daughters go through phases where they don't like their parents. And I don't want that phase to coincide with a phase where she's struggling with her identity, worth, value, any of that. If she hates me because I, you know, took her phone away, that's one thing. But if it's also because of adoption, that will be a little bit harder. So that's kind of what I worry about.
Are you nervous or worried, or are you preparing yourself at all? We had a question from Annabelle in California regarding Elliot's hair in the future. Does that intimidate you? Obviously, with the African-American culture, their texture of the hair is very different. There's she said her sister is always looking at videos and still gets questions from some moms who say, do you even know how to do that type of hair? Is there such a thing for strangers for her sister, or when she has her daughter, is it all moms who have kids with textured hair that get comments like that? Or how have you prepared for those types of questions regarding, not just hair, but
and
like, I mean, it is a big part of their culture and, you know, their identity, and it is the different type of hairstyles that they have is a huge, huge part of them. So of their culture. So
how are you preparing yourself
for
that?
Kind of learned or are trying to learn more?
I'm open to education. Yeah, again, it all boils down to education. I had people who I barely know reach out to me and say, you know, women that I'm friends with who happen to be African American say, hey, you can call me if you have questions about hair. I'm here for you. I know I don't know you that well, but I'm on your Facebook. I saw you just adopted a black baby. Like, let me know if you need anything, or I can suggest when she's older where to go. Again, my cousin Annie has gone through a lot of this. And as a white woman, you know, you have to learn a lot of things that you wouldn't have had to think of. So I think it's important for me to know how to do Elliot's hair, even if I'm not the one who ends up doing it, right? We might pick a salon that we bring her to and they braid her hair or they twist her hair, but I should understand it and know it. And it's not a thing where I'm disconnected to say, like, all right, I'll go sit in a chair for 2 hours. I'll pick you up later. Like, it's something that I am going to be a part of. I think at this point, the part of that question I think is interesting is, does it intimidate me? Yeah, it intimidates me because it's different and because it's a sense of education that I don't, a part of education that I don't currently have. It's one more layer to the onion that I have to peel in order to be as connected to my daughter as possible. But it doesn't intimidate me to the point of like, I'm going to be hands off and not, or pretend it's not a thing. Like, it's a thing and we're going to be as prepared as possible. We're going to learn. We're going to watch YouTube videos. We're going to go to anyone who wants to teach me or show me or help me. You know, someone already said at one point, you need to put some like coconut oil in her hair because it gets dried out. It gets really frizzy. And so when we put coconut oil in it, it's beautiful and perfect. And Penelope said to me today, Mom, Elliot's hair is a hot mess. Because it has been a few days or a day or two since I've put in some oil. So I'm like, you're right. It is a hot mess. I have to put in some oil. So I'm learning.
And she can learn.
And I'm learning. And hopefully Elliot, as she gets older, will understand that the best I can do is continue to learn for her.
Yeah. I think it's so awesome, though, that people have reached out to you and have. I think that's so important in anything. And whether it be adoptive or just any type of interracial communication, any type of interracial relationship, that reach out to people is so important because we are
what you know.
All, we are only so limited in what we've been exposed to and what we know. So having that education, having that reach out, not being afraid of asking those questions and people responding in a way where it is respectful. So
you
like,
shouldn't know.
I know.
Right.
You aren't going to know.
What a cool
right?
part of social media, though. That
you
people have
know.
Reached out
so
and
I'm
like, hey,
I'm
yeah,
here
I
and I'm willing
in 10 years,
to
but I'm happy
that.
To help.
Totally. Literally, this was like one of the women, my aunt, super close to my auntie Melissa, and this was like a woman she's friends with. So, an adult woman who I don't really know, I've met maybe a handful of times. I thought that was really literally a beetle just landed on me. What
You're
is happening
attic,
up here? Go away. I'm in the attic. I know.
Okay,
now
so
I'm
this is a tough question.
I
don't know if you're going to have to think about it. I think it's hard. Slajana in DC asks, what was the hardest part about adoption?
Hey, Slajana. Okay, so. Hey, girl.
Hey.
I'm not. It's all hard. I don't want to pretend like it was just one thing. It's all hard. It is the hardest emotional journey that we have been on. And I feel like we've been on some hard emotional journeys. I would say the part that had me crumbling to my knees, sobbing on the kitchen floor was about interracial adoption. We had always felt like, what the, of course, anyone, right? We will adopt any, we're not picking. Like, we'd always felt like we're very liberal, we're open-minded, we think everyone's, you know, wonderful. So why would we even consider not, it felt weird to consider not doing that. But the more you dive into the adoption world and how the agencies and lawyers are structured, it's not glamorous. And without getting into too much detail, most agencies have different price points for different ethnicities. And oftentimes, white babies, Caucasian babies, any ethnicity mixed with Caucasian, so Native American, Latin American, Pacific Islander, mixed with Caucasian, they are considered like on the expensive side. Yeah.
Fine.
And anything mixed with African American is less
so upsetting.
I know. I know. It's hard to even say out loud, but thinking about it, not just talking about it, right? Like actually thinking about it made me so sick to my stomach sometimes. There was an agency who I'm not going to say who it is, but they're super reputable. And honestly, this adoption lawyer has made great changes in the adoption community. So I'm not even trying to say that they are slimy or anything, but the way that their pricing structure is, was pretty much like, if you wanted to go for an African-American baby, you don't even have to pay up front. You don't have to pay until that baby's home in your arms, which is not how it works anywhere else. But it's sometimes it's masked in trying to encourage people to adopt outside of their race. It's masked in trying to encourage people who may not have as much money to adopt. It's masked in a lot of things, but I know we can all understand what it really is, which is like a systemic racism. And it makes me want to be sick. Honestly, after I watched this video from this agency, I almost threw up. I was sobbing on the floor. I just couldn't understand how I could have justified to my child. Like I ended up with you because I chose the cheapest package, right? Like I couldn't handle it. Right. And at that point I was pretty much like, well, maybe this is not for us. Like maybe I can't do this. So much so that, you know, talking to my parents, at one point my mom was like, that's okay. If you can't do it, you can't do it. You don't have to be a martyr. You don't have to take on the hardest task.
Yeah, just because you start the process,
she was like, it's okay to just say we are more comfortable with this or this or that. And honestly, it is a giant checkbox, right? It's one sheet of paper with pretty much every ethnicity mixed with every ethnicity mixed with every, like, 2 × 3/4 of this, a quarter of that. And you have to check off what you are and aren't comfortable with. And also there's, like I said, there's a price point that's different. And that was the hardest part about adoption. Ultimately, what we decided was to pay the premium price and open ourselves up to every single thing. We did not leave any box unchecked, but we chose to pay for everything. We chose to pay for the premium.
I remember what a hard decision that was.
I don't know
for
if
you.
This is making sense.
Yeah.
It was the hardest part. I felt like I couldn't say to my kid later on in life, you were cheaper. This was cheaper. This was the fastest. This was the most, whatever, the fastest avenue to a baby. I couldn't do any of that. So, and we also felt, you know, we chose a national agency because we felt like whoever is supposed to be our baby will find us that way versus if we just choose 4 states or just Massachusetts or just New England. It was kind of like, whatever will happen will happen if you throw out, I know it's kind of like casting the widest net. Again, it almost sounds like the fastest chances or something like that, but it was just the only way that I could sleep at night because some of the other avenues made me sick. So Jana, that was a hard question. And that was the hardest part about it.
But it's a good question.
It's a good question. It brings to light probably so many things that people didn't know about adoption. I think the first time you said it to us on Marco Polo, I was like, I don't think it wrapped around my head. Like not until you're talking about it now is it like really, really sinking in. Like it's still
hard to conceptualize.
Like what? Like
how? I think the second hardest part. One more piece is like there's also a checkbox for what other types of things you would accept. And it also feels weird to accept because at this point you're just like, I don't honestly care. I just want to have another baby and my family to grow my family. But you have to talk about like mental health, family history of mental health and certain diseases and sexually transmitted diseases and drug and alcohol use. And not just like drug and alcohol, like did they drink and smoke some weed, but like methamphetamines and heroin and cocaine and drugs I'd never heard of and all of this kind of stuff. And then on top of that, the other part that was hard, you know, would you accept a child that was a product of rape? That was another really tough conversation. And we said yes, but I'm not going to lie. We asked a lot of questions, like how many of these women who are choosing to place babies are raped from, you know, an aggressive stranger that they've never met. And that's almost scarier and more traumatic. And how do I talk to my kid about that when they're older? versus how many are date rape and they know the person and we at least have health history, how many are marital rape.
Makes you think and question things that you never would have had to.
Any level, mm-hmm. but it's just, yeah, it's things we never had thought about before. And at the end of the day, we just said yes, not just as if it was easy. It was a lot of thinking and talking and again, therapy, but those are the harder parts of adoption that I don't, you know, aren't always talked about.
And you might not feel proud of what you feel.
Yeah.
And that's okay. But you have to be able to like accept that.
We talked about, you know, not only how do you feel okay with mm-hmm. whatever your decision you make, but how do you talk about it with your biological child who's asks a lot of questions. And then how do you talk about it with your adopted child, right? Later on in their life when they're asking questions, what are you prepared to say? And what are you going to be comfortable admitting or not admitting and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, those questions were hard.
Yeah. So what advice for bringing home a baby when you just spoke on having another child, a biological child, what advice do you have or what do you say? How do you explain the process to Penelope? Mm-hmm. Like what have you guys have kind of, how did you guys kind of introduce?
So Penelope was already at an age where she understood she only really knows that one of our babies in my belly died. She doesn't know about the other two because they were so early on. So she was already understanding that like this didn't work. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to try something else. But we use age-appropriate terms. You know, sometimes mommies end up with babies in their bellies, but it's really hard to be a mommy, right? Like it costs a ton of money and it takes a village and resources mm-hmm. and jobs and healthcare and all these things that, you know, going to the doctor, I don't say healthcare, but like going to the doctor and getting medicine. And some mommies don't have access to all of that. You know, she knows that some kids in this world don't have food, don't have shoes, don't have homes. She gets that. So we use similar concepts to say like some mommies don't have everything they need to be a mommy. And so they rely on another mommy to take over for their baby. And so we use a lot of just age appropriate, you know, description and terminology. And, you know, we said we're not going to have a baby in our belly anymore. It's not working. It's making mommy sick. It's really, really hard. And so we're going to adopt a baby, which means someone's going to choose us to raise their baby and we're going to be their forever home. And they're going to have a first home and a first mommy and we're their forever home. And that's going to be your sister or brother. I mean, I say sister because now it's a sister, but we were open to both. And she gets it. I mean, she gets that Elle has a first mom. She says that sometimes. Mom, why don't you take this photo and send it to Elle's first mom? You know, stuff like that.
But I think one of the beautiful parts of kids is that they are just so accepting. And she's like, yeah, this is my sister. Look at her. It's amazing. And we love her.
This is my sister. Oh, yeah. 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 She's mm-hmm. the sweetest big sister. And that's really makes everything so much easier.
So actually one of the questions that I had come up with, so I know early on in the process, there was a lot of reading. There was books and books and pages and pages. And I don't know, there was tests, but maybe tests. But do you feel like going through this process with all that, you know, quote unquote learning, do you feel like you were more prepared to have a child because you did all that compared to the first time around? When you kind of go into this blindly, right?
Honestly, that's a really good question. I think there's two pieces of that I think are really interesting. You have to do a lot more. You're almost like legally required to do a lot more soul searching before you adopt a baby than you are to have a biological child. But there's also a licensed social worker, you know, sort of quizzing you and testing your relationship and saying, how would you handle this? And how are you going to handle that? And for some, I guess, marriages, maybe people who are married in the church and they go through pre-Cana, maybe you guys experience that, but not doing any of that. We would talk to each other, like, what kind of dad are you going to be? And what kind of mom are you going to be? But it's not as real as this, I think. So I think we were more prepared in that regard. I think the other thing that's interesting, and Kristen Davis talked about this on the Red Table Talk, but I don't know that a lot of people know this. You are like legally required to sign more documentation to bring home an adopted baby and the way that you will raise that baby than obviously you are biologically, like signing paperwork that we'll never use physical punishment, signing paperwork to name a caretaker who would get our child basically if we were to pass away. By the way, there's no will in place for Penelope. Like if Charlie and I die tomorrow, there will be an actual battle about like where Penelope
is. But Elbel is settled.
I've never done any of that. But Elbel is set. She's got a plan. She knows where she's going. There's a physical address. So like there's a lot more of a requirement with an adoptive child than there is a biological child. And I think the end of the short answer is like, yeah, you are more prepared because you kind of have to jump through hoops. And if you're going to jump through all those hoops, like you're going to know how you want it to come out on the end.
Oh, I love this one from Cassie in Rhode Island asked, how is bonding with an adoptive baby different than a biological baby? If it is.
Okay. So I think that this is one of those questions that anyone looking to adopt is terrified about. This is what I was terrified about because I grew a baby already. I already knew what that felt like. I knew what it meant when Penny came out of me and I was instantly like, holy shit, I just birthed you.
I still feel that way when I look at Oliver.
Girl.
Holy shit, what?
Yeah, right? Like, girl, we're connected forever. Yeah, like, well, that happened. So that was my hugest, one of my biggest fears before we did all of this. I think that it is different. It's totally different. But it doesn't mean one, like the second option, adoptive, right, is worse than biological or scarier or harder or less than. I have to say that for us personally, I still feel like I'm struggling because I didn't have any time off of work. So like on the weekends, I'm like, oh, we got this, girl. You and I know what you're saying. I know what you need. I'm in sync with you. You know I'm your mom. Like you are wrapped on to me. Like, you're calm with me, you're snuggling me. But Monday through Friday, when I'm not here pretty much at all, I do struggle. I'm like, how does she know I'm her mom, right? Because I'm not around. So who does she think is her mom right now? So I do struggle with that. But Charlie took off, he had paternity leave, which we were really lucky. And he's 100% bonded to her. I mean, more so with Elliot than he ever was with Penelope until like the first year of Penelope's life. So I think it's about time more than genetics.
Which is why we need maternity and paternity leave.
Maternity.
Across this country.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, no joke.
Yeah.
We were the same way with Hayden and Millie. John was with Hayden because I had to go back to work. John was still in school. I needed to make money and have insurance. And so John was with Hayden. Hayden and his relationship is like Hayden is attached to John. And Millie, I was a stay-at-home mom with Millie. So my goodness, that stubborn girl is attached to me. And as much as I love it, it is about time and bonding because while I am close to Hayden, obviously.
How did that happen?
And I've been with him for 7 years, so he's close to me now. But he did have that time with, I know, I don't know how that happened, but he's seven now and it is that time and it is the special moments that they're going to remember, that skin to skin that they're going to remember. And those little times that just those eye contact that they have with you that they're going to remember, the little lessons that you're going to provide her with.
Yeah. The first 3 weeks when I was home, like it was like a week and a half in Georgia and a week and a half home getting settled, I didn't feel any hesitation or worry or anything. I was like, oh, we're bonded. This girl knows me. I know her. We're golden. But having to go back and now being away, I have a really long commute.
It's a working mom issue.
I'm not home. I have the working mom issue, but it's just not 6 weeks. Or it's not 6 months after my baby's born. It was 3 weeks after my baby was born. So it didn't feel like enough time, to be honest.
It's hard.
It's not.
Mm-hmm. You're allowed to feel that way.
Yeah. And so speaking of spending those unique times and those special moments, what do you see unique? This is from Joanna from Massachusetts. She asked, what do you see as being unique, different, challenging in your parenting between L and
Penn? I mean, Penelope is 100% my personality. I mean, she's fresh and rude and sassy and aggressive and bossy. And so I know that a lot of that is nature. Obviously, some of it's nurture. I'm sure she sees some of it. But I mean, like, this was like before. Mm-hmm. This was like the day she came out, right? I swear she almost like wagged her finger at me. So some of it, I feel like with Penelope, I understand who she is because she is me. And I also understand for her, like, what that means, what she needs, you know, how she needs to be spoken to, how she needs to be disciplined, how she needs to be supported and encouraged. I guess down the road, I will have to learn Elle a little bit more. If she's a lot, you know, if her personality is to be super introvert and quiet and shy, and which is nothing like Charlie and I, I'll have to learn all that. However, I say that knowing full well that if I had had a biological child, they also could have been introvert and shy and quiet, and I would have had to figure that out too. So I don't know if some of it is just not knowing how she's going to be, or because she's technically birthed from a different set of genes. I don't know. I guess some of the genetic stuff is like the question that is always, it's always going to be up in the air. Is she going to experience like different medical things than my daughter experienced, or than even my nephews experienced, right? If we all have bad ears, it seems to run in our family, bad ears. Okay, got it. But if Elliot has like intestinal issues that I've never dealt with, or whatever else, skin conditions I've never experienced, who knows? So I think it's going to be different just because they're two different kids. Yeah, stay tuned. I don't know. More to come. Ask me in 15 years. There's a lot. I think there's going to be a lot.
And I feel like you're going to have that, though. Like you said, two different kids could be same family. I mean, you could have two very different children.
Yeah.
And parenting styles.
Yeah, I feel like my sister Bailey has two, and they're so different. So it's just bound to happen. Can I just give a shout out to Liz right now, who's nursing her baby while recording this podcast? Like, you are a rock star, mom.
Hungry's baby's got to eat.
True mom. True mom. Yeah, no, kids are different. I have two.
Yeah, and they really are, Gina.
My kids are night and day. Like, night and day. I, like, Hayden is so super easy. And, like, he'll listen to me, because he'll listen to me. Millie is stubborn. Like, and it is a challenge. I mean, for any parent, whether you've adopted or had biological children, with each kid, and that they even say that with pregnancy, too. Each pregnancy is different. Each child is different. That's just, I mean, that's just who they are. And it also has to do with what they are experiencing. One's a younger child, one's an older child. Where you are in your life is different probably from where you were when you had your first child. So you know a little bit more with your second go around. Like, you're more like, oh, they're a little bit more resilient. Like, she can play and eat that. She's fine. Like, she'll be good. But now that you've gone through the process, though, and I guess you still are going through the process, is this something that you would do again?
I would. We can't afford to do it again, so that's definitely not an option. My ideal scenario at this point, I think it's important for any child to have people who are similar to them in their home. I think it's important for Penelope to have another biological sibling, because I don't know why. I don't have a good answer, but I think it's important. And I think it's important for Elliot to have another adopted child in her family. They have a little partner in crime, or they just don't feel isolated or alone or different than. That would be, I guess, my ideal situation.
Alex or Liz, now hearing the whole process and seeing what Megan and Charlie have been through, would you guys, or
Jeremy,
have you guys ever considered adopting?
Jeremy and I have talked about this. It came up a long time ago, because Megan and Charlie have talked about it for so long, and Jeremy doesn't think he could do it.
Hard.
He doesn't think that he could fully love somebody that wasn't his. And, you know, everyone has those difficult moments with their kids, and when you have those moments, like, can he treat that child the same way he would treat his own? Because maybe it's, you know, a genetic thing that we have no control over, or, I mean, whatever the situation is. And I don't blame him. I think that I would be able to, but knowing that that's not going to happen because Jeremy feels that way, I haven't really fully thought it through. But I give you a lot of credit, because it's a very tough thing to be able to fully love somebody and accept them for who they are when you have no control over who they are and what they're going to be.
We have no control now.
I know.
True.
That's how I feel.
But you have to love your own child. You have to love your own child. And you would hope that you feel that way about someone you bring in. But I suppose you don't really know.
All people experience when going through that process.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. I would definitely be interested in it if we could afford it.
But have you ever thought about
adopting? I think it would come down to a financial decision, especially because I've made the choice to start working part-time, which is going to be a huge financial loss for us. I always wanted two kids. Now that I have one, I'm opening up to the idea more. But again, it's if I can afford it.
Yeah.
I also really loved being pregnant, and I would be open to doing it more times. Yeah.
Again.
You could be paid to do it.
Yeah, I definitely would be open to that. Like, I like the idea of it. I think that it's really
And then you could adopt your third.
I mean, I don't know if I could have gone that far, but I going through this with Megan and kind of being on this roller coaster with her, I think I could always tell you.
Yeah. How about you, Gina?
Yeah. I don't think I could right now with two kids. I already feel like spread thin because of the type of job John has. Like, he works nights. I couldn't imagine having another kid and fully giving that kid attention because I already feel like my attention split between the two kids. Like, Hayden, sometimes he's like, Mommy, like, come lay down. No, it's my turn with Mommy. And then Ellie will be like, no, it's my turn. And it's so hard to not. And then and that mom guilt system where it's like, no, I just want my alone time. I don't want to see any of you. So, but I think later down the road, I don't know about adoption, but I've always been interested in fostering. So I think maybe down the road, once the kids are older or once they're out of our home and I have empty nest syndrome, I would consider fostering. I've always been interested in that and maybe even fostered a parent if you find that kid that just has that fit with you. I know I've had a couple of friends who have done the fostering to parenting. And just one of my friends who
incredible
her partner actually fostered four siblings and ended up adopting all four of them. So I love kids and I love the idea of helping in general and just spreading that love and spreading the idea that you don't have to be biological to me in order for me to love you because love is love, you know, it is. And connections that we make doesn't necessarily have to be by blood. I mean, you guys, for instance, you are pretty much like family to my kids. Yeah, and my kids call you guys aunties. Like, they think your kids are their cousins. And by no means are we blood related.
No.
So, because I don't want to be blood related to Charlie. I think I would foster.
Yeah, we'll do this podcast again in 15 years.
We'll see. Yeah, ask me in 15 years.
Well, I just wanted to say thank you so much to everyone who did ask questions because it really warms my heart that people are interested about Elle and care about the community that she's being raised in or the home and the family she's being raised in. I also think it's really important to talk positively and openly about adoption. And I didn't feel like everyone I encountered wanted to share so much with me. Some people were really close-lipped for fear of being judged. And I don't have that fear. Even the things that I'm not super proud of, I hope that nobody judges me, but just, you know, have empathy and understand where people are coming from. And obviously, if you have more questions or if we didn't answer your question, please feel free to reach out to me personally or at For Mom Friends. I'd be happy to share more. And thank you, ladies, for your love, your support, your phone calls when I was freaking out, and all the encouragement and the now since having all the love you guys have given her. We Charlie and I really appreciate you guys and love you.
Love you.
Yeah.
Have a good day.
I just want to say thanks so much for having me today. I'm excited to finally be joining my four mom friends. And I really want to, again, thank Megan for sharing. It was really special to hear from you. And then all of you, thank you so much for listening. And don't forget to subscribe and follow us on Instagram at Four Mom Friends.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you. You guys, thanks, I just looked at one of those memes on Facebook or whatever.
A meme?
A meme?
This needs to go on the podcast.
I was like, what's a meme?
Meme? A meme?
I look harder than meme, so just...
I know.
Meme.
My brother-in-law, Caleb.
When Caleb does a fun answer.
I know. He does it. Well, it just then comes out of my head. It comes out of my mouth because he says it so often. So what then? I'm like, wait, that's not right. What is the right word? It says, my kid, you owe me $5.50, and it's me. You owe me at least $500,000, a new stomach, new boobs, and a new vagina.
Love it.